Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This episode of the Out of Spec podcast was brought to you by Magna. Magna is a leading-edge mobility technology company for automakers, and it supplies automotive systems, assemblies, modules, and components to countless brands you've undoubtedly heard of. GM, Ford, BMW, Mercedes, Volkswagen, and so many more. Magna has been a key player behind the scenes for decades, including pioneering some of the first reverse cameras before you had even heard of the concept. They now look to the future with fully autonomous driving systems, ADAS, and many electric car components for your EV at home. We'd like to thank our sponsors that make shows like this possible.
Hello, and welcome to another Out of Spec podcast. Tonight, you're joining me, Ben, and our friend Logan, who has been on the podcast once before, but he was just a voice coming at you. Now we get to see him, for those of you on video. Jordan and Kyle are both off tonight. They're both traveling. So we decided we're going to try and fill in, take the reins, and just run this thing right off the tracks. So we're going to be talking mainly about the Taycan, since we have two Taycan owners here tonight, and autocrossing in a Taycan. That is exceptionally cool. I'm very excited to hear about Logan's experience with that. We're probably going to touch on the new Apple CarPlay update that's rolling out in the next couple of years. It's supposed to be pretty intense. And we're also going to mention, maybe touch on these new Cybertruck photos that have kind of hit the internet today. And Ben has a whole rant he just wants to go on about the automotive industry in general, something that is bugging him, and I get to hear about it every day. So I figured, why can't everyone? So let's dive right into it. So Logan or Ben, if either one of you guys wants to start out about with your Taycan ownership, I think you both have owned it for roughly the same amount of time almost.
Yeah. Ooh, who has more miles? Let's check. I have 6,700 miles exactly.
Yep.
Where are you at?
I have 3,600.
Ooh, I'm winning or losing, depending on if you look at depreciation or not.
My Mini only has 2,600 miles on it. Thank you very much.
I was working from home for 2 years until 3 weeks ago.
So that actually is pretty impressive then. That's all fun mileage.
Right.
So am I really winning then? Probably not, because my fun mileage is definitely going to be lower, I suspect.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's unfortunate. Unfortunate realities of commuting in a car, I guess.
For sure.
Well, we've both been doing fun things at our Taycans. I had taken mine with Kyle. We've ruined a whole set of tires drifting, and you've been doing your own tire ruining. Why don't you tell us about that a little bit?
Yeah. So autocross in the Taycan. So I previously autocrossed my Tesla Roadster 2010. And I was really curious to see what the Taycan would do. And I had to wait until April after getting it delivered in December to really feel the Porsche-ness of the car. and how well it would do, and see if I had any buyer's remorse. And I'll say, like, it does not disappoint, for sure. Handling wise, it felt small, definitely a lot smaller than my Model S that I had before. It handles fantastic. Yes, I'm burning through the tires, Ben, like you said. there's definitely a lot of weight to move around there, right, with 5,000 plus pounds. But I had no braking power in the Roadster. I mean, it could go like the wind, right, but I couldn't brake at all. So it's really cool to apply the brake pedal and have it just kick in the regen for most of it. I never hit ABS on any of the hard stops. I was able to get like 1.5 on the G scale.
That's pretty good.
for left and right, going through some corners. So that was pretty fun. The first course in April that we did, I've done it in April and May. The April course was a lot more conducive to a larger car, I would say. The May course was a lot tighter. So a lot better for smaller cars, 718s, those types of things, Miatas. So
yeah. Logan, what is the spec of your Taycan again? I actually forget a little bit. I know somewhat about it, but please share with us again.
Sure.
What you said.
Which sporty options are on it? I know there's a few. Sporty.
So it's a Taycan 4 Cross Turismo, so the wagon version. But base powertrain, if you will. For those of you who don't know, who are listening, the 4 is the base model for the Cross Turismo. Mm-hmm. That's all-wheel drive. I got every dynamic option, handling option I could on the car. So the rear wheel steering, the torque vectoring.
Oh, Ben's dream spec.
Everything.
One of them.
Yeah, pretty much.
Ben has
I don't even need down. More than the 4. I think the 4 is enough power at the end of the day. It's still fun.
Yep. So, yeah, it's acceleration-wise, you know, it kept up with everybody else on the course. of course, there's a lot, obviously, in autocross that's due to the driver, not the car. So I have a long way to go to learn how to drive better, but handling of the car was fantastic. After the first lap around the track, I stopped by. My neighbor was in the row next to me in the grid waiting to go. And I was like, dude, thank you for convincing me to buy a Porsche. Like, this is fantastic.
So. A lot of people say that after experiencing any sort of autocross or track day event in a Porsche. I will say that. That is the first thing a lot of people say.
What kind of Porsche did your neighbor have? I know you told us, but I've forgotten already.
They have a 22 718 Spyder.
Oh, that's a good car too. And
magically, or ironically, whatever you want to say, the price of theirs and the price of mine were the same.
Oh, really?
Like, but it just
pretty exact.
Yep.
That's so cool, actually.
That is really cool. The when Ben and I went down to Atlanta, we went to the Porsche Experience Center down there, and we did a ride along event because they didn't have any driving slots available. And for our time that we had down there, it just made more sense to do the ride along to at least get to experience, you know, a Porsche in its element. And the car that we got to go in was actually the 718 Spyder PDK. And it was absolutely incredible. Our test driver was really cool too. He was like, oh, do you mind if I really hammer it over here? Like, yeah, just go full out. Just do it all. You got tried to get air going over around that last corner there. It was really fun. That car sounds amazing.
It is. Yeah, you can tell they're all enthusiasts at like the Porsche Experience Center, because at the very beginning where they do the, you know, standing start, they all go, so we're not really supposed to use the launch control, but if you won't tell anyone, I will. And then they'll use launch control right away. So I think there's a lot of enthusiasts at the company, which is always a good sign for driving fun. So you did 2 track days. How was the tire situation? Because we did not get very far in our tires on the track. So I'm assuming you had better luck.
Yeah. Well, you also were drifting a lot of cars too. So, I mean, on
autocross, the trip computer said 1.9 miles before it blew out. So it wasn't a whole lot of distance we covered.
That's crazy. The course isn't very long. Roughly both courses were about a minute. We do it at the basically the end of a runway out here in Colorado. But yeah, the sidewalls were nice and shiny and new and square when I started, and they are not that way anymore.
That's good.
Front and rear, but I could definitely get some rear wheel spin and some rear end drift out on some of the corners on the most recent track because it was so tight.
That's pretty fun. And so you have rear steering, torque vectoring, rear steering. That's a fun setup for a car for sure. I have none of those things. my rear steering is just drifting pretty much. That's all I've got. But I was going to say, you have summer tires on that car now, right?
Correct.
Okay, so you're enjoying it to the fullest as it should be.
Yeah, Eagle F1.
Okay, yeah, so something with axle, very grippy.
Then it's high preferences and tires.
Yeah, that's what came from the factory, so.
Yeah, that's a good tire. Yep. Yeah. I don't know what it is. I've noticed sometimes you'll see Porsches with the same wheel option, and they'll have just different versions of the summer tire all season. I'm guessing, just like other companies, is kind of what's in stock. As long as it's a Porsche variant, it's still close enough, are going to be, you know, similar in its dynamics. But I haven't actually driven this. I haven't driven the, I think it's Pirelli all season ones, or the only variant I haven't experienced yet, which is something I'm curious about. But I also am not a big Pirelli fan, so I'm kind of okay not experiencing those.
I was going to say, you have strong preferences when it comes to tire manufacturers.
I do. I'm a tire snob and headlight snob generally too. But since we can't get matrix dynamic LEDs in the US, that saves me a lot of money being a headlight snob.
Well, I mean,
I can't have the good ones yet. Yes.
Soon.
And on tires, I will say, so the car got delivered in December with summers because I forgot to check that box on the order form.
You now cannot do those with it. Now they ship with all season tires, I saw on the configurator.
Okay. Yeah, I forgot to check the box that says all seasons instead of summers. So it came with that. And then so right away I had to go buy all seasons because I live in Colorado and snow and all the things. So I hadn't had the summers on since, you know, basically just driving at home upon delivery. So that was another thing that I noticed a big change in too. I've never had two sets of tires on any car before because no car that I've had really warranted that. And after swapping the summers back on, I mean, I thought the car was, you know, on rails before. It's definitely dialed in. Steering's a lot tighter and a lot more directional.
I think there's nothing more satisfying than like going either from a worn tire and all season to like a really good summer. Like that transition is always, I don't know. There's like, you know, when a car's been like freshly detailed, it just feels, it drives better. Doesn't matter. It's just cleaner, but it drives better. Oh, yeah. Tires are that way, but you actually, it's real, which is extra satisfying instead of it being in your head.
No, I agree.
So I think now that we've had our cars probably 6 months, right? Yes, just over 6 months each. Ownership report. I have had a pretty good one technology issue wise. I've only had two. I briefly came disconnected from Porsche servers originally, and the quick reset of the car solved it. And the alarm was going off like randomly, constantly. And then they put a new part in it and it's been fixed. So now I have a perfectly functioning car. And the alarm was sort of bypassable by locking it a certain way that disabled the interior sensors. But how has yours been so far?
Yeah, the first time I had the alarm going off problem too.
What time did you discover that was an issue in your car? I discovered, I think, at 3 a.m.
No, it was in an afternoon.
Oh, good. So at least it was, you know, not waking up everyone.
Yep. And I also forgot about the, you know, double press lock to disable the interior sensor the first time I drove it, and I had my dog in the car and I went into the store. It was just going off in the parking lot, but that was my fault. So there's definitely a difference. I mean, you and I have both had Teslas in the past and, you know, used to getting those software updates and having things be fixed relatively quickly, which is not been the case necessarily with the Taycan. So my PCM is super buggy. And I would say if it wasn't for that, I would 100% love the car. But there's like just this little bit because I'm a technologist by trade and enjoy those types of things that because it's not just perfect, it bugs me a bit. So But the PCM, I've had it occasionally, sporadically boot up in German.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. I've had it occasionally boot up just with the, you know, the Porsche logo on there. And it doesn't actually get to any kind of user interface. I've had it to where it doesn't load any of the audio sources, but everything else works fine. And all of these things are totally random. As a software person myself, I would expect there to be some kind of sequence of things to where if I lock it a certain way or unlock it, you know, whatever, then it would show some of these things, but it's seemingly totally random. Also, when I'm at autocross, because I leave the car on, right, and don't shut it off at all, but you know, walk away from the car, walk back to the car with the key in my pocket, then it loses all of my audio calibration settings.
Very odd. Yeah. So, wow. Maybe it's like a wagon thing. Maybe wagons are just less reliable than the sedans or something. That's
it's all the sporty bits getting in the way. So I've all those,
you know what they say, more options, more problems.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. More money, more problems. But all those instances with your PCM, have they all happened repeatedly or have any just happened once and they've never come back? I'm just curious.
Yeah. The booting up in German is the least frequent, I guess.
Well, you should just learn to speak German. Then it's fine.
You know what? I think I've seen that once when it was booting up very early. Like it briefly said like welcome in or something, but then it quickly it switched over kind of quickly. But I think I've caught a glimpse of it showing kilometers or German before.
Yeah. Right. I was going to say, right. Ben, you had an issue occasionally where it would show kilometers in your PCM and it wouldn't let you log in. Like it would keep you in.
Yeah. Custom, that was that login issue. Which was probably the issue. Most annoying thing. Yeah. That one, they just had a reset. Like when the cars come to the US, they plug them in and they do like a, you're an American car, you're going to do these things. They just redid that and it took like 30 minutes and it was good. So I think all my issues stemmed from that specifically, because they haven't come back, thankfully. But yeah, some of those ones are different.
Yeah, when I drove away from the dealer at delivery to the speedometer gauge was showing kilometers per hour.
That's and I went, was too.
Yeah, and I went into the settings. Yeah. And it was set to miles per hour.
Yeah. You're like, oh, so
I had cool. to toggle it back and forth, and then it was back to miles per hour.
Miles. Oh, you know what? That reminds me. I have a third weird quirk with my software. Currently, every unit in the car is set to miles. Everything I see shows miles. However, if on the – so you can see your range on the cluster behind the steering wheel and in the little lower panel, like the touch panel near the cup holders, and you can also go to a charging menu – on the central like main display and see your charge there. When I look at my range and battery information on that panel, which is kind of backwards and normally not something it would do because it's kind of an inconvenient way of getting to something that I can see in two other places always, it will say if I have like 150 miles of range, it will show 150, but then it will have the kilometer denotation next to it for some reason. But the number is the same, which is interesting.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So, but, Logan, you brought up a good point where, because I drove Ben's Tesla a lot, and you know, you own a couple of Teslas yourself, and Tesla's user interface was really, really good. It probably still is one of the best ones out there by far. Mm-hmm. But
I'd argue it got a little worse with some of the recent updates.
Well, with the recent
I don't updates, like this, yeah. But they've kind of come back, but I feel like sometimes it's like two steps back and then a bunch of half steps forward to get caught up with those. But if I had a nickel for every time my podcast on Spotify in the Model 3 were just non-functional, I would probably have been able to buy a Taycan sooner. But it also doesn't have Spotify built in, so it didn't really get me that far, I guess.
But, yeah, I mean, just going from that car to like the user interface, like most manufacturers, if not all, are definitely playing catch-up to Tesla in that respect. And even with the over-air update. So it's really interesting that Porsche does not really have any, really, like, and the car is LTE.
Not feature right? updates, really, yeah. Yeah,
but, not like you can't big do, like, a ones. Software update over the air. Because, like,
it even can.
Volvo and Polestar can do
not
a lot
big
of
updates. Features. It can do, like, it does maps, and if you subscribe to your feature stuff? Like if you buy if you buy the lane keeping assist or InnoDrive. Those I think will, those are all wireless in maps and a lot of like the smaller like connectivity services I think are. But I think for the big hardcore updates that are going to be like reworking the fundamentals of the car, I don't know if it can, it doesn't seem like it can do those over the air. That's,
I
mean, for sure.
I just find that interesting that Volvo and Polestar can do that. Like they've released many updates mm-hmm. that have even changed the UI in the driver display screen where now it shows miles, or before it would, and other various little bug fixes that they've been releasing. They constantly release it almost as quickly as Tesla releases updates mm-hmm. for their cars. So to me, it is a little surprising that Porsche does not do anything like that yet. Maybe in the future they will. But it is kind of like on a car like a Taycan, who a lot of people buying that car probably owned a Model S or a Model X at one point even, would mm-hmm. be, you would imagine they'd be used to it, but maybe people just aren't as techy as we think they are.
I think Volkswagen Auto Group in general, I would say, you know, because you look at the early issues with ID4s and some of the stuff Audi's dealing with and Porsche, I think they're learning the hard way at the moment that you need to really vertically integrate all of your software and hardware solutions. So I think in about 2 or so, 3 years, the next iteration of a lot of this is going to be very much looking different in the way they, you know, from an architecture perspective, how they approach it. I think all automakers are probably getting into that. You either have a highly integrated system or you just put in a dumb head unit that's like aftermarket almost and has very little integration with the car. It's kind of, you got to go all or nothing on that stuff, I think.
A lot of the updates I know, you know, being a Tesla owner for years, were quite large. And so one of the things that kind of baffles me about the design of the Porsche too is, you know, you can have a hotspot inside the car, Wi-Fi, right? That's how it does CarPlay and things like this. But it can't connect to my home Wi-Fi network, right?
It can in Russia, I learned from the Porsche forums, but not anywhere else. I don't know why.
To get those big updates, like you have to do that. You're not going to get it all over LTE.
Definitely not.
And my LTE in the car is horrible too.
Uh-oh.
So sometimes it'll only pull updates like when I'm driving a random place that I haven't driven before. But generally I only have like one bar of signal.
Oh, wow. I have the opposite. My car's on Verizon and my phone is on Verizon and the car has great service and my phone just sucks like almost all the time for some reason. But that might be a bigger issue with the Google Pixel 6 Pro than the car. Because the car seems better there. I think the antennas in this phone are not great, unfortunately.
Do you have
as much as I like it.
Do you have the thermal and noise insulated glass?
No, I avoided that for the signal stuff.
Okay.
I'd heard, I didn't know how strong that was.
Mm-hmm. You do have that.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it is cool. Nice, though. Like on a cold day, you don't get that chill off the glass. I do like that about that, though.
I mean, driving past big trucks on the highway, super quiet.
Mm. You win some, you lose some.
Of user interfaces, I just want to touch on, so Apple just had their yearly like software event, and they did announce that there's going to be a new version of Apple CarPlay coming out, which now can actually take over any screen, all the screens in your car. So your driver information mm-hmm. display, your center screen stack. It can even display information such as your speed, fuel level, engine temperature measurements. I mean, that's pretty cool that Apple is starting to expand their CarPlay mm-hmm. model, basically, which is probably good for a lot of automakers because a lot of automakers do not make good infotainment systems at all. Whereas most of the time you just get in the car, even on my Mini, like BMW's skin over the Mini is actually kind of cool. I dig the way it looks. But it's just convenient just to get in, and then my phone connects wirelessly, which not everyone can do, which it should just be. Like, Ben can't do wirelessly without his little dongle in the car.
And cars made 4 months later can, though, which is the most upsetting part about it.
But it's super convenient just to get in, and then you have it all laid out the way you want. You have Spotify, messages. So, I mean, I'm pretty excited to see what this new Apple CarPlay feature will look like.
Yeah.
In the next couple of years. Now, I know a number of automakers have signed on, including Porsche, but like Volvo, Polestar, Toyota, BMW have all said that, yes, they will get the update. But as of right now, who knows when it will happen? I'm imagining.
And I wonder how much of this is going to be an update to the existing cars versus the new cars have to be built with that. Like, I'm going to call it CarPlay Plus. I don't know what to call it, really. Extended CarPlay capability in mind. Because, you know, then you're getting data fed to your central screen, your instrument cluster behind the steering wheel. Maybe auxiliary displays are being fed by that, a heads-up display. Like, that's a very interconnected setup there. And then the car also has to be set up to share all that, you know, whether it be engine speed, battery charge, coolant temperatures, fuel range, and gear and RPM and all that, and driving mode info back to the Apple system. So I wonder if that's a ground-up thing for a lot of cars to have to do versus in it. I imagine it's not going to be an update to a car that sports CarPlay gets. That would be my thought.
And I wonder if that'll all be supported wirelessly too, because that's a lot of
data. That might be a lot of data. Yeah. You're running, you know, realistically in some cars, you're pretty much, I would say, at least a 1080p display. But, you know, if you look at something like using Taycan, for example, I think like the instrument panel alone is like 2.5K or something, you know, and that's, you know, you've got a little over 1080p in the center console. Like, you could be, you know, you're having to push three or more high resolution monitors. That's not something that would have great latency over wireless. It might be required, like, to plug in. Or the car has to have some sort of cached data already, and then it's pulling just a few parameters via the phone, like how you like it arranged, perhaps. So this could be very interesting to see how this integration plays out. As an Android user, I just hope that it means, like, don't end up buying a car where I'm in it, and if I don't have an iPhone, it's basically like the most basic UI ever, like bare minimum, like HTML, like here's your speed and bare text and nothing else. Because that, I could also see a company being like, yeah, if you don't have an iPhone, basically all you get is a speedometer now.
Yep. And you think about something like the hyperscreen in a Mercedes.
Oh yeah, that's huge. Aspect ratios and layouts are all completely different too. It's going to require deep integration between both. I think, I'm guessing Apple's going to have, like, here's our developer kit. You as an automaker have to align with it in some way.
Yep. That's what I was thinking.
Maybe Apple will just build the whole car one day and then they don't have to worry about it. But I do think.
Yeah, but then I would be even worse off with my Android phone. I wouldn't even have Bluetooth anymore. I'd be out of it.
Well, Android Automotive right now doesn't even support
it. It'd be like, put your iCloud in to start driving and be like, oh, well, I'm screwed.
But I'm sure it'll be from ground up. I don't see this coming to, like, my Mini or your Taycan or anything like that, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. At least not anytime soon.
Are there any cars right now that allow CarPlay to interact with more than the main display currently, like turn-by-turn navigation to your heads-up or instrument cluster? I'm not aware of any cars.
I don't think the CarPlay kit even allows that, the SDK.
That's what I figured. If anyone would, it'd be BMW, I think, because they have very good CarPlay integration these days. But I haven't heard or seen. I haven't personally seen that, at least.
Yeah, so, I don't think so.
Speaking of CarPlay, Ben, well, I guess I can't ask you this question because you have an Android. I was going to ask, you know, what do you prefer, like the native PCM in the Taycan versus the CarPlay?
I actually think I like the way the interface and the customization setup in the native Taycan PCM. I like that. I still use, like, my Android Auto from all my media because it's easier for, you know, dealing with Spotify, and I listen to like 7 different podcasts and I usually go through one a day. So at some point during my commute, I have to switch from one podcast to the next, which is a different, not just a different episode, but a different podcast, you know, artist or whatever, which is kind of a hassle. So I usually am only in Android Auto or CarPlay just for media. And then I'm usually back to the factory system for, you know, data that's provided that's more in depth, or I quite like that at a glance screen where you have like your, I have it set up with the weather, my drive mode, and like one other little piece of info, like widgets style. So I set it up that way mostly. But if I was in like a Kia Rio, I don't think I'd want to look at the factory system. So
it's funny you said your widgets you have set up as, you know, weather, etc. For mine, I have it for the drive mode, the chassis, and the ride height.
That's good. That's like all the car stuff there. Yeah.
Yep. I don't have Sport Chrono on mine, because
me neither.
I thought that would be dumb because you can just do it all on the screen right there.
So. Yeah. Do you slightly regret not getting Sport Chrono? Because I kind of slightly do.
Not at all.
It might be because I have a rear wheel drive, because it's always doing that first to second gear thing in normal mode, which is normally not annoying in any way. But if you're in range mode, it's second gear all the time. And that there's like this one instance where if I come up to a like a right turn on red or a stop sign, and I'm slowing down and it's in its second gear, right as I let off the brake to like roll the stop sign and get back on the power to accelerate out, it goes, oh, he's done with regen. Let me switch to the other gear now. And it's the perfect timing for how I then go back pushing the throttle, and I get a little delay and clunk out of it. Not much, but just that's the point where I'm like, oh yeah, this has a transmission. And that's the one time that's a negative for me. So like I go to range mode quite a bit to prevent that when I'm trying to be smooth and lazy feeling.
I don't think I've ever driven the car in range mode. mostly sport.
Cause that's fair. That's
fun, but yeah. Yeah.
Well, then I guess it's just the me problem.
Probably. But yeah. So me personally, I mean, I asked you the question, but the big thing that I wanted out of the connectivity with the car was just Apple Music integration, which is native in the PCM. So I find myself just using the native PCM and not using CarPlay at all. But
how is that native? Because I'm not an Apple Music user. How does that work out? Pretty well.
That's another one of the buggy things too. So I think it all just has to do with general data connectivity. Where, you know,
I wonder if some of these issues come from your overall like data connectivity in your area then. Could be the stem, because here I have pretty good data connectivity, so I might not experience like any hangups that have a cascading effect into other weird quirks. I wonder.
Yep. I don't know if either of you are aware, but I was talking to one of the techs when the car was in getting a software update, believe it or not. And I was like, you know, why do all these things happen? And he was telling me that, you know, the car still uses the CAN bus technology versus something more modern like Ethernet. And so you basically get a packet blockage on the highway, right, of all the different systems trying to boot up and communicate with each other. And that could be part of the problem. So
that's very interesting.
That's interesting. That explains with my, I have this, it's admittedly, it's an accessory dongle that makes my Android Auto wireless in the car. When I first get into the car, there's usually very high probability that it will connect, work for about 2 seconds, and then drop off, and then take another 2 minutes to get reconnected. And I don't know if it's a dongle or what, because it seems pretty solid via the cable, but I imagine there's more stuff going to the connection side of things and communication with that wireless adapter.
He said that's why potentially the errors and the bugs I'm seeing are so sporadic. Because it's just the sequence of all the different things that are booting simultaneously.
Mm.
You start the car, and whichever one is last, you know, getting on the highway, you know, takes forever because everything else has to clear out in front of it. He said the only thing that's Ethernet in the car is from the front-facing camera for the drive mode into the drive computer. That's it. Mm. That one has to be high speed.
Oh, that makes sense. I thought, or I feel like Model 3 scan tool I had read the CAN bus though, but I wonder if they use their own sort of like, you know, it's called CAN bus, but it's a different protocol or speed layer or something. Yeah. So
yeah, for as advanced and as, you know, software heavy as a Tesla is, I would imagine they were using something more advanced.
Yeah. Cause I could read it with a Bluetooth dongle plugged into the back harness by the behind the rear vent. So I wonder, I'd have to, no way to check anymore. Nope. I don't know what that communication was on.
Yep. So speaking of Tesla, Mike, Cybertruck, new picker.
Yeah. So I'm not sure if you guys saw the new photos that were posted. I saw them on Twitter, but some new photos released of the Cybertruck, of the interior, close-ups of the interior and a couple of the exterior too, though we kind of already knew what the exterior was going to look like. But the interior, to nobody's surprise, probably is going to have a yoke, as expected. Mm-hmm. And there's some close-ups of the new driver display screen, which instead of being rounded off is more angular, kind of like the truck itself, behind the silly yoke steering wheel. And it seems to have the same touchscreen that's probably in the Model S, I would imagine, or maybe the Model 3. I'm not entirely sure if it swivels or anything like that. And it, there's also a cutout now in the A-pillar with a, like a little quarter window up there, which I'm assuming is because it was such a bad blind spot, you need to see through it. But pretty interesting. You know, it's still obviously a concept truck. Who knows when it will actually be released to this moment, but not surprised to see the yoke. I kind of was hoping it wouldn't get a yoke, just considering what the truck could be used for. I figured a yoke could get in the way if people wanted to actually off-road this vehicle, rather than, you know,
yeah, how are you going to keep your thumbs outside the wheel when a
yeah, exactly.
I'm going to say something very uncharacteristic. As much as I normally say dislike the yoke, if they give it variable steering, I'll allow it. Like, you know, variable ratio, so that, you know, the speed, it'll figure it out, so that 90 degrees is, you know, all you got to do, or a little past that, I'm okay with. And maybe,
yeah, but will they?
160 degrees each direction, I'm happy with that.
Or
no, they will.
Aftermarket, you know, wheels, that steering wheels, right, that you can swap out and make them. So,
yep, you can. Yeah. There's a
couple there's already companies doing that, I guess.
I mean, some people have swapped Model 3 steering wheels onto the Model S's with the stocks and everything.
How many phone makers now are, you know, not including particular cables and accessories that they used to?
Or anything, some of them. Some don't even get bricks anymore.
But I would also argue there's no cell phone company currently selling a phone that's shaped like a banana on the screen, where it's kind of slightly more difficult to use due to its shape, at least. Like that's the, like that's the thing I have with the yoke. It's like, it's cool, but I'm not benefiting from it, you know. Like, phones are kind of all shaped the same way because they kind of all serve the same purpose, just like steering wheels, I think. So
yeah, we've gone down the yoke rabbit hole before. Wasn't intended to start another rant on that.
I know. Well, it just bothers me that the best thing anyone ever has to say about it is you get used to it. I'm like, okay, but what benefit do I gain? That's all I care about, is what benefit do I gain? And there isn't one, as far as I can tell. No one's given me a real benefit other than it's cool, which is cool. I'll give you that. But like, I have to use it to pilot a vehicle. And like, it's, I've driven the yoke. It's really not that hard to use, but it's also not realistically better in any way. That's the issue I have. The flat bottom steering wheel thing makes sense. Like, the flat bottom of the yoke makes sense. But the top part, like, you can see a screen that really hardly shows you any information in it. So great, I guess. Like, that would be a good point if they put info there, and they don't really put as much info there as they used to in the old S and X. And those had a round wheel and it seemed to work okay. So
yeah, no issues in my Model S seeing the screen.
I would be curious. It's not like it. I'd be curious, like, what the average mental adoption time is for someone who, you know, drives a car with a yoke for the first time, right? Just like when they took away the button on the iPhone, right? It took me like 2 days, and I was like, now I'm like, well, why was it ever even there? You know,
yeah.
Why did we ever need it? So
yeah, but
this seems a little bit different than that, but
it does, just because I don't know if anyone ever is like, I mean, okay, there are people on, I see comments all the time that like, I would never go back to a round steering wheel. I'm like, okay, that's like a very strong look at it. I just want someone to give me a pros and cons list where they have pros that actually are more than it's cool on it. That's all I want to know. I just want like a reasoning behind it. Like, the engineering mindset I have is like, why is this method better than the current method? That's all I want to know. And I feel like they're on the verge of finding a way to make it be better, but they just haven't invested in, you know, in variable rate steering or anything like that. So that's my part one of a rant, I guess.
I was going to say, we just got a small preview of a rant. I know Ben does have something else he does want to rant about to us for, and it looks like we probably have enough time for it. And we're about to get pretty technical, more than likely, knowing Ben. So if you get bored, I don't blame you for turning it off at this point. But Ben, I know you.
Yeah, we're going to have to do a session on this.
I have a lot because to talk about. You won't even let me finish, so just go.
Yeah. We might have to do like a monthly Ben gets to rant about some stuff. because I have a bone to pick with automakers. And when they talk about torque and torque bias and drive bias, so that they call something, you know, rear bias, or, you know, usually it stems around when they speak out, something can send, you know, 80% of available torque to the rear wheels or 100% available torque to the rear wheels. And it's that available part of it that really gets me going, because I'm going to use the TLX Type S as an example. Almost every article I had seen about the car, you know, during the launch was, it can send, you know, it's a rear biased system. It's rear biased. It's rear biased. It sends up to 100% of the torque to the rear wheels. And everyone's leaving out the available part, which is like the fine print of it, because, you know, using the TLX, and this is very similar to the RS3 that just came out, and the Focus RS, you know, you've got a transverse, you know, so sitting left to right rather than front to back engine in that car, and those three cars in general. So the power is going to the transmission in the front, that is then split to the rear differential, which then goes to the rear tires, and then has a front differential built in the transmission that goes to the front tires. That's really the primary flow of power. There is, in the case of the Focus RS and these other cars, at the rear differential, where power is always being sent to this rear differential, that doesn't disconnect. Instead, what they do is put a clutch on each of the rear wheels, and that's what can connect and disconnect to provide all-wheel drive. So if everything's opened up, the clutches are not connected, it's a front-wheel drive car no matter what. There's no way around it. You cannot unconnect the front wheels. So when they say, oh, well, you can send 100% of available torque to the rear, the way that reads, I think, in marketing, unfortunately, means, oh, it's rear-wheel drive in that instance. But the whole thing is available torque. And, you know, if you look at a car like this on dry pavement, the only way to get more than 50% of the torque to the rear, realistically, is to overdrive those rear wheels with a different gear ratio, so that for every rotation of the front, those rear ones are going to be pushing a little harder. So maybe one, you know, 2% overdrive or 3% overdrive, to kind of help increase that rear torque bias beyond the physical limit of 50-50 on dry pavement. But when they start advertising that it's 100% to the rear, the scenario that I can envision where there's zero torque making it to the front wheels, which are permanently connected to the system, and 100 to the rear, would be the front wheels are on ice or in the air and locked by the brakes because they can't do anything. That's realistically the only way you can get 100 to the rear. So in what performance driving scenario, or even realistic road driving scenario, is that going to play an effect in a perform? Because it's always in the form of performance talk. That's what bothers me, I think. Did I explain this right? This is like the most nitpicky thing, but it bothers me a lot.
No, it makes sense. So you're saying it's actually mostly front wheel drive, and the most you can actually get is 50-50.
Yeah. And I guess if you're overdriving those rear wheels by a few percent, like in the RS, Focus RS, the RS3 and the TLX case, then maybe you can potentially, if you lock everything up, fully get, I don't know what that would translate to, generously, let's call it, you know, 55, maybe 60 to the rear at that point. But you're doing that by overdriving some wheels, which on a fully locked up system on pavement, either the tires are going to be slipping or the clutches are going to be slipping to allow that to work. And just like having a bigger tire on one side of a car versus the other side with a solid axle, it's not going to rotate at the same rate. So I don't like it.
That's definitely like a good marketing twist.
It is. Exactly. And that's what bothers me.
I agree with you. I mean, if I read that, I'd be like, oh, this is 100% real wheel drive car.
Yeah, cool. Sign me up.
But it's only at most 50. So that's pretty good.
Yeah. And that's like such a minor thing. What's the name?
Ben really wants a whiteboard right now.
A whiteboard would make this really easy. Because the RS3 was the big issue with this for me recently, and that brought it up again.
RS3?
The brand new RS3, yes, because it is still a system that's, you know, I would argue to really say you have a rear biased oil drive system. In my mind, the front wheels have to be disconnectable in some way, because if you are always powering the front wheels, then you can only ever kind of play some engineering tricks to get a higher torque number to the rear wheels. And they're not going to, sometimes it will result in oversteer or a rear wheel drive sensation. Like, here you go. This is here, motor1.com. Sorry, guys, not staying under the bus. Amazingly, the smallest RS can send 100% of the engine's torque to just one of the rear wheels in certain situations. So to do that, the front wheels would have to be locked by its own ABS or traction control system. And then the power would be going to the rear diff, which would then only be giving, you know, 100% torque to one wheel. So it'd be literally, it could send all its power to one wheel. But the situation where that's happening is where the front wheels are being locked in place with the brakes. And there are not many driving scenarios where that happens, truthfully. And a couple of these, I think they call it RS rear mode. And I'm all for it. Anything you can make more drifty and sidewaysy, I'm for. But I think as we get into this era of, you know, the rear wheel drive car platforms are disappearing, and you're going to see more of these front wheel, all wheel drive kind of packaging designed things that are, you know, I don't want to say economy packaged, because that's kind of why you do a transverse engine layout generally. I think we're going to start seeing this more, and it's going to start becoming one of those, like, what was the last thing automakers all kept saying? It's like saying you can get up to, you know, internet speeds up to 200 megabits per second, but, you know, you're actually, they're just going to give you 100 all the time. And then maybe if they have extra, they'll give you some. It feels a lot, I don't know, it just feels disingenuous to me.
So, so Ben, let me ask you this. So if you had a mid or rear engine car, like a 718 or a 911, okay, right? How does that change what you just described?
In terms of all-wheel drive or in terms of the, because those are, well, the 718, I guess, is two-wheel drive. It depends on which, I would argue that the wheels that in my kind of complaint should be considered the primary biased wheels in drivetrain terminology are whichever ones cannot be disconnected in the driveline. So, you know, like using our old Land Rover as an example, that's a four-wheel drive thing. The front and the rear are always engaged. They always get about 50-50 power through that transfer case to the front and rear, give or take. It's an open differential, so surfaces could change that. But on a fully traction surface, that's what's going to happen. Like if you look at a mid-engine sports car like the Cayman or Boxster, I mean, it's only sending power to those two wheels. Torque vectoring can then, you know, at the diff, it gets 100% power to this, and then that diff can say, I'm going to connect more or less to left or right. 911 gets interesting because it sort of kind of works in a sense like the older Audi Quattro systems, but backwards, because the engine hangs over the axle and there's a transmission more midship in position. But that's still, when it decouples the all-wheel drive system, it becomes rear-wheel drive. So I think that's still a rear-wheel drive car. You look at a BMW 340i, for example, that's a rear-wheel drive car that can then send power to the front. A Golf R is kind of a front-wheel drive car that sends power to the rear. And I think with the Golf R, people kind of understand that available torque thing. But I think when you get into this RS3, and I'm probably going to expect some sort of small AMG to be in a similar boat coming up here in the next year when they do that, I feel like a lot of those little hot hatches are where they're, or the, in the Acura TL Type S, they're the ones who I think are known the most, because they call it a rear biased all-wheel drive system. And I think that's implying things that it's not at that point. Because if you, I mean, it comes down to that example of when are you going to have two wheels in the air? And is it going to matter biases at that point where it can send power? You know, have to respond very quickly.
If we take the drivetrain out of the equation and do like electric drivetrains, that's the only way you could get truly front rear 100%.
Yes. Yeah, I guess there's probably not really any drivetrain on the market other than an electric one. That's a great point. That's why electric drivetrains are great, because it's the only thing where you can apply 100% of the power output the car is providing to a specific axle or motor, in this case, if it's a four motor car, without any going or any other weird situation having to happen to the other. Now, the interesting is, how do you classify a drivetrain bias, you know, front to rear power bias on an EV. I would argue it's the total output, like when you're at full power using the full power of both motors, what that front to rear split is how I would probably advertise. But you know, something like track mode in the Model 3, that would really let you say, I want to send everything to the rear, and only once the rear is giving its full power output, then add the front motor into the equation to make sure that you still have access to the total horsepower. So that's probably how.
And then, like you said, how do you classify it in like a Rivian that has, you know, four motors in it?
Four motors, yeah.
I would still add up the total horsepower of the front and rear axles or motor combinations and do it that way, I think, for a system power split. But they can be so much more variable. Actually, electric cars solved my biggest problem in automotive marketing. And it was a small problem that really affected, I think, me and maybe probably one other person who would read that.
Yeah, probably just you. I was hoping that you were going to
sure there's someone like Jason
to the electric car. Since
I was just saying, I'm sure like someone like Jason Kamisa sees this and rolls his eyes, or there's probably a few people out there who do, because they probably get every single press briefing on that, and they go, oh, it's not really, you know, or maybe Chris Harris, but there's more people out there. But I'm speaking up for the 1%. Or the 0.1%.
This would be a cool thing if you could, as a driver of something like a Taycan, right? You could control the bias through like the PCM, right? Like you could set it yourself. I mean, I always say there's drive modes, right, that are pre-programmed to do these things. But that would be interesting if at some point in the future, some EV manufacturer allowed you to specifically set, nope, I want it to be 100% rear wheel drive, 100% front wheel drive. Right, pick your bias type of thing. I don't know if that leads down to a dangerous path potentially with like the handling dynamics of the car, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's really what the track mode on Model 3 I felt like did, because you had a slider. It was percentage 100 to the front, 100 to the rear, and 5% increments. You could slide it, and it would, they called it a handling balance, which I think was the best way they could have phrased it, because it's not really a drive bias or distribution, because if I was going around a corner, it would, and I had it set 95% to the rear, it would basically send 95% of the rear up to the point where the rear had reached its full output capacity, and then the front had to get involved to maintain the total acceleration capability or horsepower output of the car at that point, because it's
or,
split
or
amongst
stability.
The two.
I'm thinking like stability wise, right? You
know? Yeah, well, that's why they did it that way. I think that way you could have it act as a rear drive car up until the point that would limit your total horsepower of it or whatever. So it made it great fun to drift around, and you could set it to front wheel drive and let's do like big understeer everywhere if you wanted. It was kind of funny. But it's a good point you bring up, because automakers spend all of this time very carefully developing the handling and predictability and characteristics of the car. And then I'm sure there's a lot of automotive engineers who would be like disgusted at the idea that any random person could go into the car and just like slide something left or right and make it completely, you know, ruin all the tuning that they've done, so to speak. But I think that's something that would be very cool to see. Like I could see on the Rivian, even for off-roading, like having a screen where like, okay, this is a tricky spot. The computer's not figuring it out. Let me select the motors that I want to focus the power to directly and, you know, really send it all there first before bothering with, you know, this and that. That could be, there's definitely use cases for it, I think. I'd like to see that. I mean, BMW MX Drive and Mercedes-Benz 4MATIC Plus do that, don't they? Because they're four-wheel drive systems that you can put it in basically drift rear-wheel drive mode and go blow the tires off a thing. I think we're actually it's the new frontier is weird torque control between all-wheel drive systems, electric motors. This could be the next frontier of automotive development. I mean, we've already had bouncing Mercedes-Benz suspension. You know, that I would have thought factory lowrider was never going to happen, but that kind of happened. So maybe factory, like you could pick your handling biases. You know, Honda could come out with an electric car and you could say, oh, I want it to feel like an NSX or I want it to feel like the Type R Civic. I mean, there's some interesting possibilities there, I think.
Like when you play a video game, right? And you pick which car you want based on, you know, the different handling characteristics of it.
Yeah.
To just be able to tune your own car that way, that would be cool.
Yeah. This actually, okay, here's what I want a car company to do now. We're going to use Honda as an example. Like the first Honda EV, whatever that will be, that's a mainstream, because the Honda Fit EV existed, and those are weird. But like their first mainstream one, like the Honda E, but for the US, you know, when they have a bigger market they're focusing on, I want to go into the drive modes and have like the 1999 Prelude and the, you know, Civic Type R and, you know, NSX, where you can like pick, it'll limit the motors to the right horsepower and bias, and you could get the sound effects with it too. That'd be kind of fun.
That'd be cool.
Why not?
Here, you know, like VTEC.
You know, it's like a greatest hits album, but for drive, you know, our previous cars. You could kind of have some fun with that, I think. You could simulate fake turbo lag and VTEC and whatnot through all that without too much difficulty. It's a very limited appeal as far as functions go, but it would be very good for articles and press. I mean, you know, Honda releases a new software update, and now you can drive their famous, or, you know, Integra Type R or whatever, or feel what that was like, you know, from an acceleration point at least.
It's like Waze when they release celebrity voiceovers to your directions.
Yeah, well, that's a good analog, actually.
you get car updates to your electric car. Oh, experience what it was like to drive a 91 CRX SI.
Exactly. Now your car won't be light, but you'll be able to know what that acceleration time felt like. It might be good, as you know, since EVs are going to make everything so quick, we're not really going to, there'll be people who will think, and actually, no, there are people now who think a car that does 0-60 in 6 seconds is slow, like really slow, which is, it's kind of not when you think about it. That's a fast car. You know, it's very quick. But I think EVs are going to warp our perception of this. They already have a bit, but I think like when the average like run-of-the-mill Nissan Altima type replacement is already a, you know, probably a 6 second 0-60 or something, that's going to really make, like, I don't know, something like our Land Rover, which takes over 20 seconds, seem like a joke. Like you mean you could only fit 1 megabyte on a floppy disk? That's crazy. What could you even store on that? How would you even get on the highway or something would be the question.
Yeah, totally.
That is pretty good. Well, for those of you who stuck around through Ben's rant, thank you. You are the
not the most interesting here. Topic. I appreciate anyone who bothered to listen to me just vent about that.
And I mean, wow, we actually made it to just about an hour. I mean, pretty dang close. I wasn't sure if we could get there, but Ben, I forgot Ben does like to talk when he gets on his rants. I get to live with this and hear it every day. Different rants, especially in our road trip. We have to Asheville coming up tomorrow night. We're just gonna a lot of rants, I'm sure, when we see cars on the side of the road. But Logan, thank you so much for coming back. Hopefully we don't go like 6 or 7 months between having you on again, and maybe Jordan will show up next time. I don't know.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, and maybe Apple CarPlay's new update will save us all from our technology issues in cars. So it's always that.
You never know. But until next time, thank you guys for listening. You can find Ben and I on our Twitters at @M_Breeling and at @Benji_OOS.
And if you check my Twitter, there will be a photo of my wood. I mean, my knob.
Which you just mentioned for the first time. So
yes, yeah, I know. That's why I'm going to send people photo. That.
Well, thank you guys.
It's from Mexico. And, I'm going to confuse people even further.
Now. Oh, gosh. I should end it before you just keep talking, and then it will just go on and on. See you guys.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.